today we're continuing the story of Abraham's family. Last week, we heard about God's renewed promise to Abraham that his descendants would outnumber the stars and that all the world would be blessed through them. And this week, we get to see yet again that this family that God chose is a very imperfect one. And yet God continued to work in and through them. Last Sunday night, the youth and I were talking about family relationships during our Bible study, and I told them some stories about my brother. I thought that our relationship was, a little rocky when we were teenagers. Two teenagers sharing a car, it doesn't make for smooth relationships. But our story today makes me think that my brother and I weren't really so terrible to each other after all. You see, Jacob and Esau were twins, and even before they were born, they were fighting. When Rebekah was so miserable that she cried out to God in the midst of this difficult pregnancy, God told her that she was giving birth to two nations, and the younger would take precedence over the elder. That, of course, is an absolute reversal of the tradition of the day when the oldest son was the one who always got the biggest part of the inheritance and who ruled the family. Things were passed down through the oldest son. So this wasn't the expected order of things, and it had an effect on Jacob and Esau's relationship from the very beginning. Despite being twins, they were really different from each other. Esau was his father's favorite. He was a skilled hunter. And Jacob was his mother's favorite. He stayed closer to home, usually. Their physical appearances were also very different. And we see their rivalry even before the story that we just heard. Earlier in Genesis, we read about a time when Esau had been out hunting and Jacob had been cooking a lentil stew, and it smelled so good. Esau was famished after he came in, and Jacob offered him a bowl of soup in exchange for his birthright. The birthright was the inheritance. It was what allowed the oldest son to have the largest part of the inheritance. And so, for a bowl of beans, Esau traded his inheritance to Jacob. In our scripture today, Isaac is approaching the end of his life, and he's giving thought to his legacy. He wants to pass God's blessing, the blessing that had been given to Abraham and passed on to him, to his favorite son, the firstborn, who in the normal way of things would be expected to receive it. But remember, Rebekah had been told by God that the elder will serve the younger. And rather than trusting God to keep God's promises, she took matters into her own hands. This was a pattern with that family, wasn't it? Abraham and Sarah did this again and again and again, failing to trust God's promise to provide a son and many descendants for them. And yet God was faithful. So, when Rebekah overheard Isaac instructing Esau to hunt and prepare a meal for him so that he might give Esau a blessing, the blessing, she conspired with Jacob and helped him to dress in Esau's clothes. And when Jacob said, "There is no way that Dad is going to be fooled by this. Look, my arms are really smooth, and Esau is a very hairy guy," she covered him in goatskins so that he too would be as hairy as his brother Esau. And it seems to me that it wasn't just Isaac's eyes, but perhaps his mind that had grown a little dim, because this plan worked, despite it seeming ridiculous. Jacob received the blessing. Isaac was skeptical, and yet he decided it must be Esau, because these are very hairy arms. And so he gave the blessing, passing on a father's last blessing to his son, but not the son that he thought was receiving it. And as you might expect, Esau was heartbroken. "Please, Dad, don't you have a blessing for me too?" passing of the mantle on to the next generation, and that couldn't be taken back. Blessings were words of power. They couldn't be removed. So he gave Esau a kind of half-hearted blessing, but Esau knew it wasn't what should have been his as the firstborn. And I'm sure that that led him to think back on the way that he had given away his birthright, his inheritance at Jacob's behest as well, and how now the blessing was gone too. He was furious, mad enough to kill, according to scripture. So in order to escape Esau's fury, Rachel sent Jacob away to visit her family and find a wife there. Jacob ran away toward Haran, which, if we look way back in Genesis, is the country that Abraham came from in the first place. And now Jacob was headed there, alone, on a wilderness journey. And I imagine that he must have been exhausted by his flight and by the emotional roller coaster of getting what he wanted, but then having to leave all he had ever known behind. He was so tired that even a hard stone made a good pillow that night. And perhaps it was only his vulnerability in that moment that allowed him to let his guard down enough to actually hear God speak. Because you see, until this point, if you look closely at the scripture, God has been identified as the God of Abraham and the God of Isaac, but never as the God of Jacob. And that night, Jacob had a dream that would be a game changer, because he had been hearing about God all his life from his grandfather Abraham and his father Isaac. And now Jacob knows God, not just about God. Jacob knows that God is real, is able to identify with God, not just as his grandfather's God and his father's God, but also as God of Jacob. So in this dream, this vision, Jacob saw a ladder, more accurately translated, probably a ramp or a staircase. Most of us have Jacob's ladder stuck in our heads from a children's song. And that doesn't really matter for the purposes of the story. Whatever it was a connection between heaven and earth, with God's messengers moving up and down. There. Out in the middle of nowhere, far from home, where he would never have expected it, Jacob encountered God. And it's there that God renewed the promise made to Abraham, granting those same covenant blessings to Jacob. And what a contrast this blessing is to the one that Jacob schemed to get from Isaac. Because if we read that passage, which we left out of our scripture, if you go back and read the words of that blessing, they were really about two things: material prosperity and power. And those blessings seem like things we can relate to, because they're things that many of us are conditioned to work hard our whole lives for, to have more than enough to satisfy our desires, to work our way up the ladder, socially and economically, to be better off than our parents were. But this blessing, while maybe not wrong in and of itself, is shallow and meaningless compared to the one that God offers. Because God says to Jacob and to us as members of this family of God, I am with you and will keep you wherever you go. And your many descendants will be a blessing to others. You see, God blessed Jacob with the knowledge of God's constant presence everywhere, not just in holy places where he might be expected, and with the gift of being a blessing to others, to all the families of the world. The blessing that Jacob manipulated Isaac to receive was all about being served. Right? These people will serve you. You will have power over them. But God's blessing is about being blessed in order to be a blessing. God's blessing is to know God's presence and to share it with others, to spread the news that surely the Lord is in this place, wherever this place may be, and to work for a world where all can experience God's goodness here and now. In other words, as Jesus put it, to receive a blessing is not to be served, but to serve. To love as we have been loved, to represent God's image in the world. And as I studied this week, I read some words of a Scottish pastor, Terry Peterson, who pointed out something really important. That this is true for us as individuals, that we are blessed to be a blessing, but it's also true for the church as a whole. If we asked what it means for a church to be blessed, I suspect that some of the answers would have to do with having a lot of people, or financial resources, or a beautiful building. But that isn't God's definition of a blessed church. In God's definition, a blessed church is one that gives itself away as a blessing to others, that knows that the people are the church, wherever we are. A blessed church isn't a church that is packed to the rafters, standing room only. A blessed church is a church that is reflecting the image of God outside the sanctuary walls, loving its neighbors in every neighborhood where the church, the people, live. A blessed church isn't one that controls or manipulates to get what it wants. It's one that recognizes God's presence everywhere and stands up to say, surely the Lord is in this place, in the grocery store and downtown, in dark alleys and in the hospital and in schools and in a beautiful park and an ugly empty lot and everywhere else. When we put all our energy into pursuing blessings for ourselves, as individuals or as a church, we can't see what's right in front of us. And that means that, like Jacob, we may need to stop scheming and trying to control everything around us, as if we can, to be willing to pause, to be vulnerable, to stop working so hard for our own institutional survival and the desires of those already within the walls, and make space for God to speak, even if it's to give us a blessing that we aren't sure we really want. Because sometimes God shows up in ways and places that we least expect. You know, this week we've just moved into a new season, a time of change as we watch the thermometer begin to fall, which is good news for some of us and maybe not so much for others, and the leaves begin to drop. And it's also the time of year when we seek decor with words like thankful, grateful, blessed. I have some of those words on my own fall decorations at home. And it is right and good to be grateful for what God has given us. We should approach God with thankful hearts. But when we use that word blessed lightly, when we think of it only in terms of our individual selves or material blessings, that is some pretty bad theology. Does it mean that God isn't blessing those who struggle financially? Doesn't bless refugees or those victimized by terror or natural disasters in their own countries? Not at all. It's our perception of what God's blessing means that gets skewed. Because you see, like Jacob, we need to realize that God blesses us for a purpose. When we recognize that God is calling us to be a blessing to others, then we will share the good news, spread the blessing far and wide, participate in the work of all those messengers of God as they go to and fro between heaven and earth. And my prayer today is that when you see those blessed signs, that you will think, I am blessed and I need to be a blessing. I pray that we will all spend a little time in the wilderness, watching for God, even in unexpected places and ways, so that he might be blessed, in order that we might go and bless.